Hello, and welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and current events that shape the news. This is Alan, your host, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you prefer as we jump right into the topic at hand. In the wake of immigration enforcement raids by ICE, social and political unrest is gripping Los Angeles and threatening to explode in other major cities across the United States. This enforcement marks a major policy shift from the previous one exercised by the Biden administration. But this shift goes beyond ICE, increasing the number of deportations. The Trump administration is also trying to overturn over 150 years of legal precedent by changing the rules regarding birthright citizenship. If you're born on U.S. soil, you're a U.S. citizen. It's an idea that seems simple, but the reality is that it is anything but simple. It is now a political battleground, and the legal battle will answer philosophical questions about who belongs and who decides. Let's start with the origins of birthright citizenship in the U.S. Most pundits in the media tie the concept of birthright citizenship to the passage of the 14th Amendment and the desire of the federal government to ensure former slaves and their children would be granted the citizenship rights spelled out in the Constitution. But the truth is that the concept existed in colonial America even before U.S. independence. Its development was shaped by British legal traditions and early American law. In colonial America, the principle of jus soli, or right of the soil, derived from English common law, was the prevailing norm. Under this doctrine, anyone born within the dominions of the English crown was considered a subject of the crown, regardless of parental nationality, with a few exceptions, such as children of foreign diplomats or enemies in wartime. This inclusive concept of subjecthood would influence American legal traditions after independence. The U.S. Constitution, ratified in 1788, did not explicitly define citizenship. However, it implicitly recognized it in several clauses, such as those related to qualifications for federal office and the privileges and immunities of citizens. The Naturalization Act of 1790 was the first federal law to address citizenship directly, though it focused on naturalization and limited it to free white persons, excluding enslaved people, Native Americans, and other non-white populations from the possibility of naturalization. Children born in the U.S. were generally presumed to be citizens, but this was never clearly codified in early federal law. In the early 19th century, courts began interpreting birthright citizenship more narrowly, especially along racial lines. The most notorious decision was the Supreme Court's ruling in Dred Scott v. Sanford in 1857, in which Chief Justice Roger B. Taney declared that African Americans, whether free or enslaved, could not be citizens of the United States. This decision denied the principle of universal birthright citizenship and heightened sectional tensions, leading to the Civil War. It is important to consider the history behind the fight for civil rights whenever discussing civil rights in the modern era. The founders of the United States spelled out their belief in the sanctity of the rights of the individual and the importance of securing the blessings of liberty for the citizenry. And while that concept was limited to free whites, and those rights were generally denied to marginalized groups, women and people of color, for example, the evolution of our society has been one in which those rights have expanded to include marginalized groups. The concepts haven't changed. What has changed is the inclusivity of those rights. The Civil War and the abolition of slavery prompted a reevaluation of citizenship. The passage of the 13th Amendment in 1865 ended slavery. However, it did not address the status of former slaves as citizens. In response, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which declared that all persons born in the United States and not subject to any foreign power were citizens, aiming to secure rights for formerly enslaved individuals. To solidify and protect the gains of the Civil Rights Act, the 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. Its first sentence reads, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside." This constitutional provision enshrined the principle of birthright citizenship and overturned Dred Scott, ensuring that citizenship could not be denied on the basis of race or previous condition of servitude. The phrase "subject to the jurisdiction thereof" was later interpreted to exclude certain categories like children of foreign diplomats, but affirmed the general principle of jus soli. The Civil War is one of the dividing lines in U.S. history, where things are often arranged as occurring either before or after. In fact, the term antebellum comes from Latin for before war and is used to describe the demarcation in time. In the aftermath of the Civil War, the United States was trying to rebuild not just its physical infrastructure, but its moral and legal foundation. Remember, the 14th Amendment states all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. It was a radical declaration at the time, one meant to overturn the Dred Scott decision, which held that African Americans, whether enslaved or free, could not be citizens. Nevertheless, the phrase "subject to the jurisdiction thereof" was not clearly defined. The argument the Trump administration is making to change the accepted rules for an untold number of current and future citizens revolves around this exact phrase. However, legal precedent matters. In 1898, the Supreme Court ruled on the case Wong Kim Ark versus the United States. The ruling reaffirmed the common law tradition of jus soli, the idea that birth on U.S. soil confers citizenship, regardless of parents' status, as long as they are subject to U.S. laws. The ruling cemented the principle of birthright citizenship, at least for the children of legal immigrants. The details of the case are as follows. Wong Kim Ark was born in San Francisco in 1873 to Chinese immigrant parents who were legally residing in the United States but were not U.S. citizens. After visiting China in 1894, Wong was denied re-entry by U.S. customs officials on the grounds that he was not a citizen, citing the Chinese Exclusion Acts. Wong filed a habeas corpus petition, arguing that he was a U.S. citizen by virtue of his birth on American soil. The federal government contended that the 14th Amendment did not apply to the children of Chinese nationals who were barred from naturalization and owed allegiance to a foreign power. In a 6-2 decision, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Wong Kim Ark. Justice Horace Gray, writing for the majority, held that the 14th Amendment's citizenship clause, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens, applied to nearly all individuals born in the United States, regardless of the nationality or immigration status of their parents. Gray relied heavily on English common law and historical precedent, reaffirming the jus soli principle. The Wong Kim Ark ruling remains the most authoritative interpretation of the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment and is often cited in debates about immigration, birthright citizenship, and the rights of children born to undocumented immigrants. Legal scholars widely view the Wong Kim Ark ruling as a foundational case for civil rights and constitutional law. Legal scholar Garrett Epps argued that the case enshrined the principle of equal citizenship, rejecting nativist attempts to racialize national belonging. Harvard professor Erica Lee emphasizes the case's centrality in resisting exclusionary immigration policies, particularly against Asian Americans. Conservative critics, however, have occasionally questioned the scope of the ruling, particularly in relation to undocumented immigrants. Legal scholar John Eastman, for example, has contended that the decision should not apply to children of individuals residing illegally in the U.S. This is essentially the same argument put forth by the current administration, though this interpretation has not gained judicial support. Overall, historians and constitutional scholars generally agree that Wong Kim Ark ruling affirms a broad and inclusive understanding of American citizenship and continues to serve as a bulwark against efforts to narrow its scope through statutory reinterpretation or executive action. There are other parallels between Wong Kim Ark and the current push to exclude the children of undocumented immigrants from birthright citizenship. Wong Kim Ark was excluded from re-entry and originally denied his citizenship on account of the Chinese Exclusion Acts. laws specifically targeting people because of their racial background. The current push to exclude birthright citizenship of the children of undocumented immigrants is also predominantly based on the ethnicity of the individuals being targeted, no matter how much the proponents of the Trump administration's challenge deny the charge. More recent Supreme Court decisions regarding citizenship only strengthened the Wong Kim Ark ruling. In 1982, in Plyler v. Doe, the Supreme Court ruled that undocumented immigrant children had a constitutional right to access public education in the United States. The issue began in 1975 when the state of Texas amended its education laws to withhold state funding from local school districts for the education of children not legally admitted into the country. Additionally, the law allowed districts to deny enrollment to undocumented children. A class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of a group of Mexican children who had been denied access to public schools in Tyler, Texas. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court struck down the Texas statute as unconstitutional. Writing for the majority, Justice William J. Brennan held that the law violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Although the court did not recognize undocumented immigrants as a suspect class deserving of strict scrutiny, it applied an intermediate level of scrutiny and concluded that the Texas law could not be justified by a substantial state interest. Brennan emphasized that denying children access to education imposed a lifetime hardship, served no legitimate state goal, and punished children for the actions of their parents. He famously wrote, "Even if the state found it expedient to control the conduct of adults by acting against their children, legislation directing the onus of a parent's misconduct against his children does not comport with fundamental conceptions of justice." Although Plyler v. Doe did not address birthright citizenship directly, it has become highly relevant to contemporary debates surrounding the rights of undocumented immigrants and the children of such immigrants, including U.S.-born children who are citizens by birth under the 14th Amendment. Legal scholars and historians point to Plyler as affirming the broader principle that the Constitution protects the rights of persons, not just citizens, within U.S. jurisdiction. Legal scholars widely view Plyler as a critical precedent in defending the rights of undocumented individuals, especially children. Legal scholars Peter H. Schuck, Professor Emeritus of Law at Yale, and Rogers M. Smith, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Pennsylvania, argue that the decision reinforced the inclusive spirit of the 14th Amendment and pushed back against xenophobic legal policies. Mei N. Jai, Professor of History at Columbia University, has noted that Plyler represents a modern echo of the same values that underpinned United States v. Wong Kim Ark, a recognition of children's innocence and the state's responsibility not to create a caste of disenfranchised residents. Some critics, particularly in conservative legal circles, have questioned the durability of Plyler in light of increased political pressure to restrict immigration and reconsider birthright citizenship. Nonetheless, most constitutional scholars assert that the Plyler ruling, in a similar fashion to the Wong Kim Ark ruling, has become a bulwark against efforts to erode equal protection for immigrant communities. Another landmark Supreme Court case, Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, addressed the balance between national security and individual liberties during wartime. Since the crux of the decision related to Hamdi's birthright citizenship, its importance stretched beyond national security concerns. Yasser Esam Hamdi, an American citizen born in Louisiana, was captured in Afghanistan in 2001 by U.S. Allied forces. The U.S. government designated him as an enemy combatant and detained him indefinitely without formal charges or access to legal counsel at a military facility in South Carolina. Hamdi's father filed a petition for habeas corpus, challenging the legality of his son's detention and arguing that a U.S. citizen could not be held indefinitely without due process. In a plurality opinion written by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, the Supreme Court held that although Congress had authorized Hamdi's detention under the authorization for use of military force following the 9/11 attacks, U.S. citizens designated as enemy combatants still retain their due process rights under the Constitution. The court ruled that Hamdi was entitled to notice of the factual basis for his classification and a fair opportunity to rebut those facts before a neutral decision maker, the plurality explicitly rejected the government's claim that executive power alone was sufficient to detain a citizen indefinitely without judicial review. While Hamdi did not directly address birthright citizenship, its significance lies in the affirmation that U.S. citizenship guarantees constitutional rights, even in national security contexts. Hamdi's status as a natural-born U.S. citizen was central to the court's reasoning, establishing that the government cannot strip citizens of fundamental rights, such as due process, solely by labeling them enemy combatants. Legal scholars view Hamdi as a reaffirmation of the core constitutional principle that citizenship entails protections against arbitrary detention. Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and Yale professor Linda Greenhouse has emphasized that Hamdi rearticulated the idea that birthright citizenship is not merely a label, but a bundle of rights that the government must respect. Scholars like Akhil Reed, M.R., professor of law and political science at Yale University, have linked the ruling to both Wong Kim Ark and Plyler Verus Doe, arguing that the Constitution's protections apply universally to citizens regardless of circumstances, origin, or perceived threat. In contemporary debates, especially as some political actors question birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment, Hamdi serves as a powerful reminder that citizenship conveys non-negotiable constitutional guarantees, even when national security concerns are invoked. In all these cases, the Supreme Court reinforced a broad interpretation of the 14th Amendment Citizenship Clause. The current administration faces an uphill battle in its fight to rescind the citizenship of those born on U.S. soil, regardless of the status of their parents. But that battle is where we are today. In recent decades, the term anchor baby has entered political discourse, often used derisively to suggest that people come to the U.S. to give birth in order to gain legal status. However, having a U.S.-born child does not confer legal status on the parents. It may help them qualify for certain benefits decades later, but it's not an immigration loophole. In fact, the number of children born from this maternity tourism, while real in small numbers, is statistically insignificant. The vast majority of U.S.-born children are born to parents who live and work in the U.S., often for years. Nevertheless, bills have been introduced, though never passed, to limit or redefine birthright citizenship, such as the Birthright Citizenship Act introduced multiple times in Congress. The 2025 iteration would restrict citizenship in the United States by attempting to redefine who is considered subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. for the purposes of birthright citizenship, as currently defined by the 14th Amendment. Specifically, the bill limits birthright citizenship to children born in the U.S., to parents who are either U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents, or non-citizens with lawful immigration status actively serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. However, it would seem certain that if signed into law, it would immediately be tied up in the courts and ultimately find its way to the Supreme Court for a determination of its constitutionality under the 14th Amendment. Another argument that proponents of the restriction make is that the United States is the only country with birthright citizenship. This assertion is false, as all of the countries in the Western Hemisphere allow some form of citizenship based on birth. In the case of the United States, it is constitutional law. President Trump's attempt to restrict who falls under that constitutional protection through a simple executive order was folly. The only way the status quo is going to change is either by a constitutional amendment, which would be impossible to achieve, or by a major shift in the way the Supreme Court interprets the language of the 14th Amendment, something that would overturn more than a century of legal precedent. But the Trump administration's effort does more than fight legal precedent. It also aims to push back against the evolution of society at large. There is a large segment of the population that sees the United States as a flawed nation, created by racists and slave owners, and one lacking any redeemable qualities that would warrant anyone's allegiance to its existence. However, the nation's saving grace is that it has taken the principles of its founding, based on natural rights of freedom and liberty, and fought to include groups that were once denied those rights. This hasn't come easily or quickly, nor is the fight concluded, But even though the progress has been painfully slow at times, there has been progress nonetheless. The attempt to deny citizenship to a group of people, especially one based on the ethnicity of the targeted groups, is an attempt to reverse course on the expansion of civil rights. Where would revoking birthright citizenship for children of undocumented immigrants end? If someone born on U.S. soil is suddenly a foreign alien, does that mean that their children are now exempt from citizenship as well? How many generations will the government apply this new standard to? The Pandora's box of unintended consequences could be horrific indeed. Regardless of how the Supreme Court rules, however, one thing is certain. We live in interesting times. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to the show. In the next episode, we will look at how the original structure of the Republic was changed forever by a constitutional amendment, and why that simple change is a disaster for the nation. If you want to know what that amendment is, you will have to tune in next week. Until next time.